All right, check, two, three, four. Check, check, hey, hey.
It was the day before fall began, but summer was nowhere close to saying goodbye. I hopped in the minivan on that clear morning and headed northeast through the rolling hill country of western North Carolina, staying off the main highways as much as possible. It was a beautiful drive past farms and country stores from Lawndale and Bellwood into Connolly Springs and Rutherford College, home of the Lovelady Fire Department. Across Rodas Lake and over Cages Mountain, and then into Lenore, where I picked back up onto Highway 18 and continued north. I had saved the Marcus King Band's new album, Carolina Confessions, for a first listen on this drive. Do you ever have place memories associated with music? When taking a trip, I'll often try out some choice new music for just that. The chorus kicks in, the music swells, and there you are, cresting the hill as the sun's rays cut through the forest at just the right angle to dot and dance on the dilapidated farm to the left and the black and brown cows grazing in the pasture to the right. 2 hours later, I pulled into Wilkesboro. It was late morning, and temperatures were already in the upper 70s. A full day of music lay ahead, and I would MC bands from the kickoff of the festival to early evening. When I would switch gears and get this episode started with an interview of members of our subject of this podcast, the band The Steel Wheels. You'll get to hear them and several others familiar with the band talk about bringing new life to songs close to a century old, the push and pull of wanting to make music, but also wanting to address the massive divides between us and help build community, how some Southern stereotypes drive them nuts, how drums and percussion have found their way into their sound and have helped build upon rather than remove their foundations, what podcasts they listen to on their way to playing some 120 shows each year, as well as a lot of their live set from this festival. There's a lot to the music and the lives of the Steel Wheels members that I didn't know before diving into this episode, and I bet there's a lot that you'll discover here too. All of that is ahead on this episode of Southern Songs and Stories.
Osiris.
Hey, this is Chris Pandolfi from the infamous String Dusters, and this podcast is part of the Osiris podcast family. Osiris is a growing community of music and culture podcasts connecting music fans with conversation, commentary, and music. Osiris works in partnership with Relics. Check them out for all kinds of new music, news, and information. Osiris.
Southern Songs and Stories is sponsored by you. When you join us as a patron and help keep this series going. More information is on our website at southernsongsandstories.com and our crowdfunding page, patreon.com/southernsongsandstories. You can subscribe to the Southern Songs and Stories podcast on our website, as well as Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, SoundCloud, CastBox, and Plex. Would you take a moment to rate the show and comment on this podcast there? It's one of the easiest and best ways to get more people like you to know about Southern Songs and Stories and the artists we spotlight. Thanks for listening to Southern Songs and Stories, and we welcome your comments by email at southernsongsandstories@gmail.com, on Twitter at South Scenes, on our Facebook page, as well as on Instagram at South Stories.
One of the things I've learned over the years with this endeavor is that a great many followers of Southern culture and history are not from the South, or at least they grew up somewhere else before spending time here. Some of the best insights into the South come from people who did not live their lives here. I figured that when creating Southern Songs and Stories in the fall of 2014, most interest would come from people in the South, especially here in Western North Carolina, but that wasn't always the case. As I talked with fellow travelers who were involved with producing media based on Southern culture, they shared some surprising takeaways. The South was not always as popular in the South as it was in places like New York, San Francisco, London. Members of the Steel Wheels call Virginia home, although most members are not from that state, and almost all of them grew up somewhere else. Except for their newest member, percussionist and keyboard player Kevin Garcia, they have called the Mother of States home for longer than any other. There is family, and then there is the family that you choose, and the family that chooses you. In the case of the Steel Wheels, the family embrace is not only mutual, it is all the more compelling because of these different origins. The story of the Steel Wheels has something in common with the story of the Krüger Brothers, the trio from Switzerland who host the festival where they played this song, on that night, straddling summer and fall.
Well, speaking of the Kruger Brothers, we want to dedicate this song to them tonight. I think it's a beautiful story to hear their path to North Carolina and the way they brought their music here some years ago now, and also how this amazing community has been built around their music, at least in the form of this festival and at most just their continual career around. To me, it's a beautiful story, and this song is one that I wrote about falling in love with Virginia, which is where I live, where the band calls home, and it wasn't my home of origin, but I've been there longer than anywhere else, and so I call it home. But sometimes you're born into your home, and sometimes you find home, and this one goes out to anybody who's found that home, and particularly the Kruger Brothers, and we're so grateful that they did find their home here in North Carolina. So this one's called Rescue Me, Virginia. Came from Kansas, where the sky is so big you feel alone. But that prairie gives meaning to the mountains that I call my home. My family is Midwest, where the days don't seem as busy as the space to wander, as the wandering never gave me peace. Oh, rescue me, Virginia, rescue me. Sing the songs from the ancient, washed me in the sea. Rescue me, Virginia, rescue me. Oh, rescue me. Brother lives in Pittsburgh, he's different in the ways you'd like to see. Like the rivers of that city, deep at his center, he is free. Sister rides from Wichita, she's kept herself steady in the wind. Coast. She's always been the most easy kind of friend. Oh, rescue me, Virginia, rescue me. Sing the songs from the ancient, wash me in the sea. Rescue me, Virginia, rescue me. Oh, rescue me. Makes a difference where you go. It makes a difference where you go. It makes you different where. Colorado is a promise I could keep. She's younger and wild, those aren't the mountains calling me. I'm not from here, but this is where I want my roots to grow. All the miles that I've traveled, finally find myself at home. Oh, rescue me, Virginia, rescue me. Sing the songs from the ancient, wash me in the sea. Rescue me, Virginia, rescue me. Oh, rescue me. Thank you. All right.
That was Rescue Me, Virginia, a song that Trent Wagler co-wrote with Sarah Siskind, who has co-written many songs with him. As I sat with Trent and bass player Brian Dickel before their show that night at the Carolina in the Fall Festival, we talked about one of the constantly recurring questions in this series, how they relate to and reflect Southern culture and music.
For us specifically in our music, the inspiration of mountain and Appalachian music is undeniably a large part of the fabric that we draw from.
We probably wouldn't be playing this if we didn't move to Virginia.
No, absolutely not. That's for sure. To me, when I think about Southern culture and music, I think about the generosity of the crowds and the love for their music, and I'm putting their in quotes, but there is this sense of bluegrass and old time and the blues, and a lot of that sort of rises up from the South in this undeniable way. And it's, of course, now, because we are such a, as a country, we are so transient, that culture has moved along a lot of borders, and so you hear Southern rock coming out of Minnesota or whatever, but there's still this heart of it that's here that I know for us, playing in Virginia, but then coming down to North Carolina, I mean, the love for clawhammer banjo, the love for the fiddle, you can't always find that somehow feeling quite as natural or normal when you're playing on the streets of Columbia, Missouri.
It's a
or
novelty
something.
More.
Yeah. and there's this sense of depth to it here that I think is really palpable, and it's always felt very welcoming for us as a band.
Yeah.
I think that some of the other aspects of Southern culture that maybe being a transplant, some of the things I feel strongly about now as a band that comes from Virginia, and so even though I was born in Indiana, you were born in Iowa, our identity when we go out and about, we are a band from Virginia, and we are this, so we have Virginia on our backs, whether we like it or not, whether we even understand what that means to other people. But I do feel like the South has, there's so many stereotypes of the South. I mean, some of the stereotypes of the South are really positive, like the generosity and the hospitality and the great food and, some of those aspects. But there's also a lot of just clumsy and lazy stereotypes about Southerners not being as intelligent or not being as educated. People use that Southern accent to sort of evoke a sense of, some sort of country yokel or something. And I think that for us, it's important to me that in our music, we are evoking stories that come from the South and stories that come from the mountains. And we want it to be something that bridges that, but we're trying to write smart songs. We're trying to write songs that are real and honest and authentic, and we're not trying to write about some stereotype about somebody coming out and knocking a beer bottle over somebody else's head, because that's not the reality we see around us. And so it's important to me that we keep it as honest about what's really going on, at least in our lives and our views of the South, from our perspective, rather than trying to build some sort of... It always bothers me when bluegrass or country music goes along with these old stereotypes of saying, this is what we do. We put a piece of straw on our teeth and we play the banjo and we beat our wife or something. Like, that is ridiculous, and it has no place in this music, in my opinion. And so it's important that we actually build something new that can take the beauty of this, of the culture that we have, but also build onto it the aspects that we're learning in the rest of our culture. And if you want to wear coveralls and you want to chew on a piece of straw, that's great.
We're going to do a couple old-time songs. We just released a little 7-inch vinyl record, a little single. So we'll do the B-side and then the A-side. You can get a hold of these at the merch table if you like to see the vinyl still go around in a circle. And otherwise, you can find them online. Kind of a special little project where we decided to take the old songs and make them new again, for us at least. We drew a lot of inspiration early on, especially from Doc Watson's music, and we always love that moniker of traditional plus music. And that's what Doc called his music, and we're still trying to figure out what it means to keep adding more pluses to some music that's just been around and continues to stay in our community. So here's to things that last. This one's called Red Rocking Chair.
Your red rocking chair. sugar baby now. Who rocked the cradle? Who will sing the song? Who's gonna rock the cradle when I'm gone? Who's gonna rock the cradle when I'm gone?
On their 2017 album, Wild As We Came Here, the Steel Wheels added Kevin Garcia, formerly of the Ducks. With Kevin, they brought percussion, drums, and at times keyboards into their music. If you listen to acoustic roots music lately, you've probably heard a lot more of these types of elements, especially percussion in the form of, say, a cajon, on up to full drum kits. I asked several of our guests about how they hear it fitting with the Steel Wheels sound, and this type of music in general. Here's Steve Johnson, head of artist and music event management company, Hoosier Devil.
I grew up really deeply entrenched in traditional bluegrass. Family was around Bill Monroe, the father of bluegrass, for those that may not recognize that name right away, but hopefully they do. So I grew up in the shadows of that. You know, he was a family friend, and we were at those shows frequently. And if you listen to some of the Monroe mandolin, and he even talks about this a little bit, there's some snippets out there on, snippet clips of video where you can find some of his discussions on this, where the mandolin sort of takes that percussive beat that you get from the drum kits now, you know, some of the sounds from the cajon or that type of thing that gives that solid backbeat to the music. It was there, and Monroe would allude to that. He may never come right out and said, you know, it replaces the drum or it's in place of the drum, but it was rooted in that percussive beat type thing. And I've heard him talk about it. I think a lot of folks that are traditionalists around bluegrass don't really understand that even Monroe was a little more progressive in his sound, because that was the feel or the beat that he was looking for in a lot of his music. If you listen to it, it's there. So I think it's important to remember that piece to talk about the next piece of this, which is, I think it's really just an evolution of what started then to now, but I also think as music has progressed, and you think about stereophonic, the evolution of the sound of how we listen to music, a lot of it is rooted in that bass or that percussive sound. And I think the listening mainstream public have gotten used to hearing that solid beat behind the music, and the drum just delivers that. So it's just kind of the natural evolution or progression. Drumming has been around for a long time musically. I mean, it was one of the earliest forms of making any kind of musical beat or sound. So a lot of people say, well, this is new and it's different. And some people say it's new and it's blasphemous and it doesn't have a place in music. But I think it's always been there. It's just been there in different forms. And I think now the listening public are used to being able to hear that in a progressive stereophonic type sound. It's something they come to expect and expect it to be at the forefront. And I think bands are just responding to that.
I think it is a way for people to just expand their appeal. It is, for some people, not having the drums. Certainly, you're right. There are bluegrass bands that are adding drums. I mean, but I also think of people like Jim and Jesse, who are considered to be bluegrass, and they had drums. There were J.D. Crow albums that had drums on them, too. So I don't think this is a completely new phenomena, but certainly there does seem to be, in the last several years, bands doing this. And I just think it's fine. I think the most important thing is the music good. Do people like to hear it? I'm not a big believer in just having a genre of music stay the same for the sake of the genre staying the same. And there are so many different people who have been doing, if I put quotes around bluegrass, for years that have always been different. You think of like Newgrass Revival. They had their own take on things. And, thank goodness Tim O'Brien had his own version of Newgrass. And he's a great proponent of acoustic music in general. And he's done it in all different kinds of ways. So I'm just really glad that they're figuring out new cool ways to present themselves. Especially this last album, I think the thing that kind of was so good that just brings it back to what's most important about the Steel Wheels is they write and sing and perform really good songs.
One of the questions I often get from customers is what kind of band are we going to see tonight? And I really dislike that question because the greatest bands like the Steel Wheels, You can't quantify their music whatsoever. They're always pushing the boundaries of what their sound is, and that's a beautiful thing. So I love it when I can't answer the question, what does this band sound like?
That's John Bright, owner of The Purple Fiddle in West Virginia, the club where the Steel Wheels played their first gig outside of the Shenandoah Valley they call home. Before John, Ann Williams, the morning host at Roanoke, Virginia public radio station, WNRN. Earlier in this episode, you got to hear the band's take on the traditional number Red Rocking Chair, which is the B-side of a recent single. The A-side is coming up next, followed by more of our conversation with Brian and Trent, as well as Ann Williams and the Steel Wheels business manager, Ben Coe. Now, back to that warm evening's performance for this almost psychedelic cover of Working on a Building.
Working on a building. Working on a building. Working on a building. Working on a building.
if I was a drunkard. I tell you what I'd do. I would quit my drinking and I'd work on the building too. I'm working on a building.
We had been talking about reimagining some old traditional songs for a little bit, and Working on a Building is one that we have some history with because we recorded it on our first album as the Steel Wheels on Red Wing. But that's been, you know, 8 or 9 years ago since we would have recorded that. And when we did, it was a very straightforward approach. Maybe the vocals are slightly different, but otherwise it was, you know, acoustic guitar, mandolin, fiddle, one microphone. Yeah. We actually recorded that thing outside in this cabin in Augusta County, Virginia. So now, yeah, it kind of represents in a way the movement of the band and how we've changed, especially in the last 2 to 3 years, where we've added some more electric instruments and we've electrified our sound in some ways. We've added percussion. And yeah, we wanted to take another stab at it. It was a really fun process. Plus, I think it was a bit of a, I mean, I don't know, Brian, maybe you, it was a little bit of like, we used to get that song requested
we
so
do.
Much.
And I'm going to take the blame here that I kind of put the stop to it. I said, I can't play that anymore.
Yeah.
Years ago, we just had played it too much. Always gets requested. So yeah, now if people say it, we're like, oh yeah, we can do that
we'll
one.
Do it.
Not what they're expecting at all. And so far, the reaction's been great. People, there's been a few where people are like, oh, I really like the old version. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with the old version, but it's fun to push it in a new way and just see what comes out of it, you know. We didn't have any real aspirations of making it, you know, bigger than what it is. It's just, it was a fun time in the studio to see what happens with an old-time tune, kind of without thinking about it as an old-time tune.
Once upon a time, we did a bike tour across North Carolina. We started west of here in Black Mountain. We came across the mountains. And, man, there's plenty of mountains. In this particular bike tour, we were carrying our instruments and all of our gear with us on the bikes or bike trailers or cargo bikes. And it was a challenge that started out as a joke that got way out of hand. But I tell you what, you really appreciate every mile when you pedal it, and you appreciate the inclines and the declines in a new way that you don't when you're burning that gas. So we earned every single mile getting to Wilkesboro that time. We played our show to the handful of people who
were bothered enough to come out of their houses. You feel like you earned a huge crowd, you see, when you bike 60 miles on a big bike like that. You feel like you earned it. But it was all right, because by the end of the day, you were seeing double anyway, and so the crowd started to get real large after a bit. Anyway, this is a song we often joke is our bike tour mantra. This one's called Long Way to Go.
Somehow the conversation came up of the band riding their bikes into the Festi, and the festival called the Festi was in Nelson County, so they live over in Shenandoah Valley. So they would have had to come south and then come east and go over the mountains, Blue Ridge Mountains, which are significant. You know, that's the Appalachian Mountain chain, so it's real mountain, a couple thousand feet elevation gain, and then come down into the festival after that. And so on the day of their set, and if I recall correctly, the weather wasn't great. It was a little bit drizzly and it was cool, bordering on cold from what I recall. And sure enough, here they come an hour and a half before their set maybe, or something like that. They come pulling into the festival with everything that they need. It's not like they had some kind of support vehicle. They literally came with everything that they needed. They weren't wearing their stage clothing, so they come pulling in bike clothing, and they have Brian, obviously, as a stand-up bass, and so he's literally got a folded-up stand-up bass on the back of his bike. Not, you know, not like you're going to the grocery store, but a trailer on the back with that. Yeah, it was so impressive. A band of four guys at the time come pulling in with all of their gear and their change of clothes and everything.
One of the interesting things that people might not know about Harrisonburg, Virginia, is they have a great biking culture there. There are a lot of trails. There are a lot of people who like to bike. There's one of the big bike fundraisers that goes 150 miles in the Shenandoah Valley, you know, goes in and out of Harrisonburg. And I would imagine a lot of people from Harrisonburg help out with those kinds of fundraiser events, where some other communities might have lots of 5Ks and 10Ks. There's just a lot of bike tours and things like that out of that area. And the Steel Wheels decided that they were going to do a whole tour biking with their instruments. And I just can't imagine them, like, you know, biking up these mountains, you know, and they talk about it, how tough it was. And then they realize that, you know, this was great. They did it once. They're happy they did it, but we don't need to do that anymore.
I know the guys pretty well. I've worked with them for a few years, and they have some Midwest roots. I swear that I can hear that in the music. There's something about it. Almost sometimes I can hear these sort of lonesome prairie sounds in some of the songs.
I think the average fan would be shocked to find out that they weren't originally from Virginia or the South or the mountains of Appalachia, because it certainly really comes through their music, and they've been heavily influenced by it for sure. I was actually surprised to read to find out that Trent wasn't from this area. I do remember when Jay used to perform with the Gold Mine Pickers, and I knew they were from Indiana. The Gold Mine Pickers very much have an Appalachian sound as well.
They are curious, intelligent people who love music, and they continue to evolve. One thing I know about Trent and some of the early members of the Steel Wheels is that they used to play together at Eastern Mennonite University in kind of like a punk band. And I think that energy always excites me when it gets applied to any kind of music outside of punk music. I like punk music too, but I have always been a fan of people who apply that energy to like country music, like Kevin Kinney, or, you know, if it's going to be kind of old time, then the Steel Wheels kind of also brought their own version of that to their start. They were not, I mean, individually, they were interested in folk music particularly. And then they kind of decided that they didn't want to do the punk music anymore and they wanted to play together. So taking up acoustic instruments and learning how to play together. And then they were in Harrisonburg, in kind of one of the great places where you can learn about Virginia traditional music. And so they just were sponges.
You know, listen to some of the old roots music where you've got someone, you know, maybe playing a Paul Hammer banjo and stomping their feet. They're creating a beat there. And they were really trying to, I think what you're seeing now is sort of emulating, I guess is a better word, versus saying mimic. Or they say imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. And I think really just trying to play, you know, pay homage to kind of those sounds that maybe were the earliest recorded sounds of that type thing. And, you know, it's there. And it's just kind of taking the journey back to appreciate the origin of it. But as with anything, you know, I mentioned Monroe earlier in his music. If you listen to his style from the 30s, when he and his brother Charlie were performing and playing music together with a mandolin and a guitar, one or the other of them, depending on where they were in the break cycle of the music, were kind of taking these percussive beats and then move that forward to some of the later works that Monroe recorded. You kind of still get the same thing. And I should know this, but I don't. I'm not so sure that Monroe may not have had some kind of percussion or drums in his music at some point. But Jimmy Martin introduced a snare drum early on into the bluegrass world, kind of gave us that little percussive snap and beat. And heard, you know, Johnny Cash say that the way he tried to play the guitar was to mimic the rhythm of the snare drum. And I think you're kind of getting that same thing now with some of these, you know, more Americana roots type bands, that they're really kind of going back to the tradition, but taking their music and just applying that formula to it and really creating almost an entirely different sound. Not maybe a new genre, but certainly a different sound.
And here's a bit more of that new sound from the Steel Wheels with Wild As We Came Here.
started with anger. Keep it wild for my daughter. We've never been here before. $2 an acre won't make the papers. Saw you crying across the room. There was nothing that we could do. We've never been here. What could we do? At $2 an acre won't make the paper.
Thematically, with the, yeah, the content of your music, I mean, to quote your own Facebook, you've got home, family, community, a sense of belonging, seeking and finding, the pendulum of gains and losses. These are the big issues embedded into the fabric of the steel wheels. But you also can make social statements with mm-hmm. your music. It may not be overt, mm-hmm. but how do you balance that? Because the times that we are in, yeah, people tend to be taking sides, it seems, to put it very mildly.
Yeah,
we're certainly not hurting for division these days. You know, it's we talk about that. We've talked about it for years, even before what we consider the chaos happening now in our country. I mean, there's always been chaos, but we've talked about it from the start of like what are we trying to say with the music? What are we trying to say with our night and evening of performance? What are we projecting, you know? And it's not a put on. It's all still from the heart. We're doing what we feel inside. But yeah, you're correct. We're not in your face, like, saying exactly what we feel. We talk about that sometimes too, like, should we be or should we not, you know? In the end, right now, as you alluded to, everything is so divisive. I mean, you can't go online without ending up in some, you know, juvenile argument, even without even trying almost. It's just everything devolves into just chaos. And so for one night, we're trying to be smart with what we're presenting you, giving you... I'm always surprised when we sometimes get misread as to what our beliefs are, because we're like, it's pretty there. But, you know, we're not beating you over the head with it, and we like to have you walk away with an evening of, like, at least for a few hours. Trent said it a million times on the mic, like, you know, you have your phone down for a couple hours. You're not on some feed telling you how much you should hate your neighbor. You're not getting bombarded with that. And for 2 hours or 3 hours, you're having a night out with strangers. You may disagree with everything with the guy right next to you. You don't even know it. But you're both enjoying it under this umbrella of good music, good community. Maybe it's a small repair into where it goes from there. Maybe it's just a pipe dream that we have for those few hours. I don't know. Yeah. But that's kind of where we approach it at this point anyhow.
And it's a great question. I think it's something that we do wrestle with. I don't always feel resolved about it because I feel like on one hand, you do see it in the context of what is our role in the larger society, in our particular spot on stage in those 90 minutes or whatever our slot is at a particular music festival or a performance that people bought tickets to come and see music. What is it that we are actually there for? What's the music for? Is it there to ask questions? Is it there to dig and maybe make you uncomfortable for a few minutes about what you believe or think in the cultural or political climate that we're in? Or is it there to comfort you and make you feel a part of something when the rest of the week you're feeling in this division? That can be a cop-out at the same time. Like, that can be a safe way of saying, well, we don't need to cover those difficult topics because that's not our role. That's not our place. And at the same time, every night we have a microphone and we're in front of a bunch of people and we have a platform that we could stand up and say as, you know, in this case, five guys who are from the South, this is what we think, this is what we see, and this is what we say. And so we wrestle with it. And there's times where I've made flat-out comments about the news of the day, and I've made it very clear about what I think, but I also want to be careful not to alienate people simply to take advantage of that microphone I have, because it may totally discount the rest of the night. That may be the only thing that those people have heard, and at the end of the night they just walk away and say, this is, you know, the whole thing was a big rant and rave session with Trent about this, and that's not what we're trying to accomplish. At the same time, I do wrestle with how much of that unity for that 90 minutes is that what we need, and yet I go back to the social media feeds and all we see otherwise is division. And so trying to highlight that in the midst of it, of saying, we can do this, at least we can do this. It is a social statement. It is taking a stand to basically say, I'm going to sit with these neighbors I don't know and watch and listen to music. That's important to me, and that builds a kind of community. I mean, it doesn't seem like a strong political stance, but it is a stance in the midst of what, you know, I was just having a conversation. This is totally off the subject a little bit, but I was having a conversation about the way we communicate and about my grandmother, who used to always, on birthdays, she would write letters. They'd give you a card, you know, some card they bought, but then also this letter. And the letter always started with the weather. It always talked in the, she wrote by hand what the weather had been.
A little out of date by the time you get it.
Yes, like 2 weeks ago by the time you get it. But I thought, man, this is so interesting to me. And when I think about it now, the weather is such an easy thing to find on that app on your phone. We would never do that. We never talk about, we certainly wouldn't write it down. And yet there was something so comforting and beautiful about that. That I think, I don't know, it's a bit off topic, but at the same time, it's what, there are certain aspects of things we just lose by, without even realizing it, by the way we communicate and by the way we gain and access information. And I am not anti-phone, I use my phone all the time, but at the same time, so many of us have our heads in these phones so much of the time that I think it's important that we don't discount how much a little bit of art in our lives, a little bit of setting that aside and looking around and seeing the people around us enjoying something creative and something imaginative, how much that can really bring to a community. And so, I don't know. I do go back and forth from thinking it's the most revolutionary thing that we can do just to play music, and then also thinking, no, we've got to, you know, we need to be active in so many other ways in order to build a strong, true community with a capital C. So maybe we need to do both.
Yeah, probably so. I think you can get both in the same evening, even now, you know. It's not overtly in your face, but it's a thinking show, even though it's a fun show, you know. It's kind of where we're at right now.
Well, we're going to do a song for you now called Love Longer Love. It's one that we recorded here in our last album cycle, and it didn't make the record properly. We sort of ran out of room, but we decided we would still give it a life, and we released it as sort of a part of the deluxe album online. But in a time when it's sometimes so noisy and so messy out there with so much yelling about, I was inspired to write this song for my mom, who talked to me about parenting, and
And Mom's sage advice was just love. When there's no other, when you're not quite sure how to parent, just love and err on the side of love. And she lived that for me, but it felt like about the best advice I could get. You gotta love these banjos too. They'll love you back if you get them in tune. This one's called Love Longer Love. Here you go.
As I record this podcast, the Steel Wheels are recording their next album in a 1700s farmhouse in Maine that was converted into a studio, producer Sam Kassirer's Great North Sound Society. It's an exciting time for the band as they give birth to the next chapter of their musical journey. They're also deep into their preparations for Red Wing Roots Music Festival, held at Natural Chimneys Park in Mount Solon, Virginia. When the festival kicks off next July, it will be the seventh time around, although I couldn't tell you what the lineup will be. They're keeping that pretty close to the vest. But based on last year's acts, which included the Steep Canyon Rangers, the Secret Sisters, Josh Ritter, John Moreland, Mipso, the Warren Treaty, host band the Steel Wheels themselves, of course, and others, it ought to be pretty strong. Red Wing is very dear to the band's fiddle player Eric Brubaker, who hosts the four-day music camp leading up to the fest called Red Wing Academy. It brings in violin, viola, cello, bass, guitar, mandolin, and banjo students who work with members of the band and other instructors, and it culminates with a performance at the festival alongside the Steel Wheels. At every Red Wing, there's a tribute set, and last year the band played the music of Tom Petty. Covers are a great insight into where an artist's heart is. Here's one that stood out back on that first night of fall in Wilkesboro.
Drive me crazy.
the Steel Wheels always work in some spiritual a cappella songs into their sets. They're also a very DIY bunch, and both are on display here in their encore.
There's a rain coming down in the valley. We're gonna wash in the river so deep. Well, there's a rain coming down in the valley. Oh, Lord, there ain't no devil going where I go. Ain't no devil going where I go. Ain't no water going to bring me down. There ain't no devil now. Gather up the rain to come in. There's a rain coming down. Meet me out at the edge of town. There's a rain coming down. There's a rain coming down. Well, there's a rain coming down in the valley. We're gonna wash in the river so deep. Well, there's a rain coming down in the valley. Oh, Lord, there ain't no devil going where I go.
Trent is wielding his shaker stick there, the song Rain in the Valley, going back to their 2012 album, Lay Down, Lay Low. I noticed it was homemade, with the sound coming from flat steel washers attached all over it. Like a lot of bands, this crew has skill sets outside of music that come in really handy.
I'll brag on Brian while he's standing here, is that he is our band mechanic as well. And I think about it because on our last trip...
we've had a lot of those lately.
we've had a van that is, you know, I don't want to say any negative or disparaging words about... Henry Ford or his
or possible later inventions of his family.
but we have had a number of issues where, and on the last trip home, actually, we were driving home from Kansas, so we had a 14-hour drive through the night, and I was sleeping in the bunk in the back, and I woke up twice, actually, both times, one time to Brian just cursing as he's trying to get this hot spark plug.
Really hot. We're going to put really hot.
Yes. Cracked hot spark plug out of one of the cylinders so that we could replace it and get it running again because it was missing. And then a second time there was another mechanical issue and we had to wait until we could find an AutoZone that was open at 7 a.m. on a Sunday morning.
Always a Sunday.
So these
always
are
a Sunday or a holiday.
So these are the really sort of beautiful and amazing stories of the road that you don't think about very often if you just come to the shows, is some of that back end of, you know, repacking bearings on the trailer.
We're shocked that we're there half the time every night.
Yeah, yeah.
The crowd doesn't even know. I can't believe we made it.
But no, Brian is our in-house mechanic where he's you know, repacked the ball bearings on the trailer.
Yeah, 2 a.m. we all stuck it out together.
Stuck it out.
And ready to go into the hotel.
We've fixed a number of issues that certainly if Brian hadn't been in the band, the rest of us would have been looking at each other and looking at our phones and being like, maybe it's a belt.
It's my job security. I'm not necessarily any better at playing bass, but I can back the van up really well and fix things. So.
It's invaluable on the road. It really is.
This could be a word to other bands when you're auditioning somebody to get them MacGyver, pick him.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and I will say...
His rhythm's all right, but man.
Well, that is... I mean, honestly, that is a huge aspect that you do not think, and you really shouldn't make it a part of the artistic decisions of the band, but at the same time, if you can find me a drummer or a bass player or a musician who can also design a poster or who can back up the van or who can advance shows or design a website or whatever, like those skills in this climate of the way music is done today and the way you need to be a jack of all trades.
We still keep it pretty in-house when we can. Like, we're kind of like, I don't know, we can do that. One of us has that skill. Why not? You know?
Yeah.
So we like that aspect.
And it's important. It really is. I mean, I think we don't. Yeah, we're not a band that gets too worried about getting our hands dirty, literally in some cases, to make sure that the whole business is running and that we can get to the next show. And so that's an aspect I think that also keeps the band together, is that we can tell. You know, when you're getting your sweat and your hands dirty,
we're all earning it.
We're all there. Yeah.
In any relationship, it always works best if everyone pulls together and aren't afraid to get out of their comfort zones every so often. Like the examples Trent and Brian told us about there, that do-it-yourself attitude is one of the secrets to the Steel Wheels success and longevity. That's our show. Thanks for listening, and thanks to both the Osiris Podcast Network and to Bluegrass Planet Radio for carrying the show. Thanks to Sean Rubin for help engineering the recording of the band's live performance. I encourage you to spread the word about this podcast and consider helping us by subscribing and commenting on our show and becoming a patron. You can find out more at southernsongsandstories.com and at patreon.com/southernsongsandstories. And you can keep up with us on our Facebook page, on Twitter, @SouthScenes, and on Instagram, @SouthStories. Plus, our podcasts are available on practically every platform there is. You can find out more about the Steel Wheels on their website at thesteelwheels.com. This is Southern Songs and Stories, the music of the South, and the artists who make it.
Osiris.
There's also the working songwriter in the music world. We've definitely had a lot of our friends interviewed on Joe Pug's podcast. Yeah, he does some great interviews about songwriting and
with
songwriters.
We did Otis Gibbs for a while, his podcast. Yeah, I know. We kind of vary. Yeah. Depends on how long the drives
are.
Or who's
Otis Gibbs? Yeah. Thanks for Giving a Damn is his podcast.
Yeah, short little shorts. And yeah, it kind of varies. It's usually like, you know, we got six of us in the van full time, so it's like who's discovered what when they're off the road, and you bring something to the table, and, you know, some people get into them, certain ones, and other people check out in the back, but it's a nice thing to roll the hours by, for sure.
There's another ridiculous one called How Did This Get Made? It's a movie podcast about, like, the worst movies you can think of. it's like Jason Mantzoukas and who's the other guy? Kind of the main guy. Paul Scheer. they're actors themselves, and they just go through and find the worst movies and then just talk them through with a live audience, usually is the best. And it's pretty funny, especially if you've seen the movie yourself. Especially if you've seen the movie, it's really funny. But even if you haven't, in some cases, it's just hilarious to have them describe how terrible this movie was.
We shouldn't reveal where Jay goes sometimes, but Jay, is it Case Files?
Yeah.
It's just dark, like police files of the most gruesome things. We're like, we kick Jay out of this when he puts it on. We're all going to just be depressed and angry when this is done.
Yeah, it's basically people just reading off case files of some of the most horrendous crimes.
Don't go to it, but Jay goes there on his dark places.
Yeah.
He's not here for the interview, so we can reveal his secrets.
This is an endorsement of it.
It's true. There's going to be people being like, man, I got to listen to that.
Check that out.
That sounds amazing.
Jay seems happy all the time on stage. It must not be affecting him.
That's right. He's a great guy.